Simon, thank you very much for the kind introduction, and thanks for all you do at MDN. Thanks for organizing this session especially. Let me just acknowledge Bob Simon, who's the director of our staff on the Energy Committee. He's here with us and does a great job. And Stephen Ward is my chief of staff. He's also here. Does a great job. Both of them and the rest of the staff we have really are first rate. Here at the beginning of a new Congress, I do think it's becoming clear that energy policy will have a major place on the agenda of the new Congress. Part of that's because the President made it clear last week that he is going to give it real priority. In his State of the Union speech, he said that. Part of it is because of what we're seeing in Egypt today, and the reminder that is of our dependence on foreign sources of energy. Anytime there are geopolitical events of this type, it clearly has potential effects on our access to affordable energy supplies, and the Congress usually gets very interested in energy in those circumstances. But perhaps more important than either of those reasons is that the competitive pressure that we as a country are experiencing with other major economic powers as they take a very leading role in clean energy markets. According to Bloomberg New Energy Finance, new investment in clean energy globally reached nearly $250 billion in 2010. That was a 30% jump from where it was in 2009, a 100% increase over 2006. China alone invested $51.1 billion in clean energy in 2010, making it the world's largest investor in this sector. China now manufactures over half the photovoltaic modules that are used globally. In 2010, China installed about 17 gigawatts of new wind capacity, about half of the total that was installed globally, with virtually all of the equipment being supplied by its own domestic manufacturers. But the concerns about the competition for clean energy jobs is not just about China. Europe has also made major strides this last year toward competing in these markets. Countries like Germany and the Czech Republic and Italy, United Kingdom, have emphasized small-scale distributed electricity generation projects. In Germany, 8.5 gigawatts of new photovoltaic capacity was added in 2010. So there's a lot going on around the world on this subject. We also see that other countries consume energy much more efficiently than we do. International Energy Agency, IEA, has indicated that Japan, the United Kingdom, and Canada are all ahead of the United States in implementing policies to make sure that they get the most out of every BTU that they consume. Japan has its Top Runner program, which encourages competition among appliance and equipment manufacturers to continuously improve the efficiency of those appliances and that equipment. So the issue is, how do we respond? How do we as a country respond to this competitive world that we're faced with? I believe that in order to remain at or near the forefront of this strongly developing market, we need to do at least four things. Let me go through those briefly. First, we need to ensure we remain at the forefront of research, energy research and development, since innovation is the source of our greatest competitive strength. The President made that point in his State of the Union speech and in many other forums. Second, we need to ensure that we have a strong domestic market for clean energy technologies. Without clean energy market pull in the United States, there will not be the incentive to manufacture or deploy these technologies here. Third, we need to ensure that we have the necessary financial infrastructure and tax incentives to provide the capital needed to build advanced energy technology projects. Finally, we need to have explicit policies to promote the development of U.S. manufacturing capabilities for these clean energy technologies. I think these four items or elements are at the heart of what should be considered in the way of energy legislation in this new Congress. Let me say a few more words about each of these, and then after that I'll go through some more specific information about what I hope we can move ahead on by way of legislation. First, support for advanced energy technology research and development. America has traditionally led the world in many of the characteristics that are essential to having an innovative economy. We have the predominant share of the world's best research universities. We're the world's largest source of financial capital. We have a disproportionate share of the world's leading innovators in high technology. But our advantages, these advantages, are shrinking rapidly. In 2007, the United States energy research expenditures were at about 0.3% of GDP. Japan was at 0.8% of GDP. China was at 0.4% of GDP. And since then, our overseas competitors have significantly increased their research investments in energy, while we have our own investments in these areas have grown only modestly. It's clear that if we're to put together any kind of legislation that deserves to be labeled a comprehensive energy legislation, we need to address this huge gap between where our investment in energy technology research is and where, in fact, it ought to be. In the State of the Union speech that the President gave, he correctly identified this as a major priority for the appropriations process this year. Secretary Chu will be appearing before our Energy Committee on February 16 to testify about the details of the President's plans for funding in this area. And of course, the budget will be released on the 14th of February. So that's energy research and development. Second is ensuring a robust domestic demand for clean energy technologies. It's obviously not enough just to support the research. Getting clean energy technologies developed, manufactured, and deployed here in the United States will require a robust and a certain demand for clean energy in the marketplace. And this reality was underscored to me recently in a trip I took to Silicon Valley. I spoke to various people there involved in financing and developing clean energy projects, from venture capitalists to project developers. The consistent message I heard was that uncertain U.S. demand for clean energy is preventing many promising clean technologies from being developed in this country. Companies will not establish a manufacturing base where they do not see a strong market. Private capital sources are, in fact, exerting intense pressure on American clean energy innovators to establish their manufacturing base overseas, where government policies are creating this strong clean energy demand. So we have to take seriously the marketplace reality that the high-wage clean energy manufacturing of the future will be located close to where the demand is, and it will be located in countries with the most favorable clean energy policies. My desire to see the U.S. lead the world in renewable energy manufacturing so that all of the solar panels and wind turbines that we install around the country are not stamped made in China or made in Germany is the key reason why I've long supported the renewable electricity standard. We need to provide long-term market predictability for renewable electricity. Our on-again, off-again production tax credits are no match for the comprehensive approaches being put in place by our economic competitors. The third item I mentioned there is deployment of clean energy technologies. We have to have policies to encourage deployment of these technologies. While end-use demand is certainly one of the first things an entrepreneur or a potential investor looks at when deciding where to locate operations, analysis does not end there. An equally important question is there a path to full commercialization of the technology. How do we build a first-of-a-kind project or the first few-of-a-kind projects utilizing a new clean energy technology to demonstrate its actual cost and performance? This is what the private sector wants to see before it will invest in a technology. This is a particular problem with clean energy technology because the capital costs in this area are higher than some of the previous high-tech success stories that we have seen with IT and with biotechnology. No investor in today's marketplace can match these capital requirements by themselves. Our competitors in Asia and Europe have set up institutions to address the problem. They've already successfully lured companies to commercialize and manufacture their U.S.-developed clean energy technologies in those markets. We need to set up similar institutions if we hope to support clean energy jobs here in the United States. The fourth item I mentioned was support for manufacturing. If we want clean energy jobs in this country, we need to have policies to encourage manufacturing to occur here. In addition to providing a predictable market for clean energy and a robust financing capability for first-of-a-kind projects, we also need to have incentives for manufacturing the critical components for clean energy technologies. Other countries, most notably China, have complemented their clean energy market standards with robust tax incentives and other fiscal subsidies specifically targeted at manufacturing clean energy components. And as a result, the U.S. has gone from being a world leader in producing clean energy technologies and enjoying a green trade surplus of more than $14 billion in 1997 to a green trade deficit of nearly $9 billion in 2008. We can't afford to sit idly by as our economic competitors move clean energy manufacturing steadily overseas, depriving Americans of solid job opportunities. So these are four key strategic elements that need to be included in energy legislation in this Congress, in my view, if an energy bill is to help us compete in global energy markets in the future. None of these individual ideas are new or is new, but their interconnection, I think, is now more apparent to all of us than it used to be. A few years ago, we thought we could do one or maybe even a few of these things and be successful. It's now clear we need to do them all, and we need to do them at a level that is competitive with what other countries are doing. Let me now describe some of the specific policy initiatives I think are timely for us to pursue in the Senate this year. Most of these initiatives will be items that I hope to champion in the Committee on Energy and Natural Resources. This is not intended to be an all-inclusive list. The committee has 22 members, many of whom have just been appointed. I anticipate a lot of meetings and bipartisan dialogue in the next few weeks as we work on our legislative roadmap for this Congress. But the following topics are issues that I think are particularly crucial for us to address. They're also issues where we did have strong bipartisan consensus in the 111th Congress. This gives us a good place to start our deliberations this year. Let me start with energy efficiency. The cheapest energy is the energy that we do not have to use because we are operating more efficiently than we might otherwise. So clearly, energy efficiency is where we should start all these discussions. In the last Congress, we had a very productive dialogue in the Energy Committee and among businesses and manufacturers and efficiency advocates interested in appliance and equipment energy efficiency. The result was a package of legislative provisions that codified consensus agreements to update certain existing appliance standards, to adopt new appliance standards, and to improve the overall functioning of the Department of Energy's efficiency standards program. Many of these efficiency provisions were part of the comprehensive energy bill we reported out of our committee in 2009, ACELA, the American Clean Energy Leadership Act. Others were either subsequently approved by the committee or part of bipartisan bills that were introduced. These sorts of standards are essential, in my view, if U.S. appliance manufacturers are to remain competitive in world markets, which will increasingly demand highly efficient appliances and highly efficient equipment. By ensuring a strong domestic market, for we can keep innovation and jobs here in America while realizing significant energy savings and water savings and major cost savings for American consumers. Obviously, we had great difficulty in getting any sort of legislation through the lame duck session of the Congress if we did not have unanimous consent, and we had broad bipartisan support for the legislation I've been describing, but we did not have unanimous support. This is an important piece of legislation for our early consideration in this Congress, and I hope we can consider it fairly early in the new year here. My staff's been working with the consensus group of stakeholders on some further technical changes to the package that we had developed last year, and I plan to introduce a revised package within the next week or two. There's also a great deal that can be done to promote energy efficiency in other parts of the economy. Let me just very briefly mention that in residential and commercial buildings, we had a broad coalition of support, both Democrat and Republican, for the Homestar proposal. I hope we can move ahead with that. We had similar interest in improved energy efficiency in commercial buildings with Building Star. Again, I hope we can move ahead. In transportation, there were two proposals in the last Congress that I think deserve a closer look. First, providing a greater point-of-sale incentive to vehicle purchasers with dealership rebates that would be larger for more fuel-efficient cars. Senators Lugar and Snow and others co-sponsored this legislation with me in the last Congress. And second, a set of proposals that dealt with diversifying the sources of energy that we use in transportation. This bill was one that Senators Dorgan and Alexander proposed. We passed it out of our Energy Committee on a 19-4 vote. Again, I hope we can move ahead with that as well. And the final area for energy efficiency I would mention relates to energy efficiency in manufacturing and industrial operations. The legislation we reported out of our committee last year contained a comprehensive program on manufacturing energy efficiency that had good bipartisan support. Again, I hope we can move ahead with it. Another area that the President highlighted in his State of the Union speech was how we can move to a cleaner energy mix. This is a priority that the President has and many of us have had for some time. For a number of years, I've advanced a proposal, as I mentioned before, for a renewable electricity standard to ensure a long-term and predictable demand for renewable clean energy resources. The President proposed to expand that on that concept by including a broader suite of technologies such as nuclear energy, coal with carbon capture and storage, and natural gas generation. The President's stated goal, as he described it, was to achieve 80% of our electricity from such clean energy sources by 2035. The White House has asked us to work with them to see exactly how the provisions for this clean energy standard would be developed. Obviously, there are a lot of details to be worked out. I'm very pleased that the administration has reached out to our committee to consult on this subject. Perhaps no topic garnered more scrutiny during Congress's last year's markup in our committee, or really the 2009 markup, than the renewable electricity standards. So I plan to work with my colleagues on both sides of the aisle in the committee to determine how we can craft a workable legislative proposal to achieve what the President has set out as his goals. As we do so, there are a number of key design issues that we'll have to answer. First, what counts as clean energy technology? Second, how does the proposal account for existing clean energy sources? Third, does the credit trading system that we had developed for renewables in our proposal on renewable electricity fit with, how does that fit with these other resources? On financing of energy projects, I think there are at least three top priorities for attention in this Congress. First, reforming the current loan guarantee program for clean energy projects. Second, providing financing support for advanced energy manufacturing in the country. And third, providing reasonable stability and predictability in the tax code provisions that apply to clean energy projects and technologies. First of these, to reform the current loan guarantee program for clean energy technologies. Our proposal there in the last Congress and still has been to replace the loan guarantee program with a Clean Energy Deployment Administration, or CEDA. CEDA would be a new independent entity within the Department of Energy, but with autonomy, similar to what the Federal Energy Regulatory Commission has. It would provide various types of credit to support deployment of clean energy technologies, including loans, loan guarantees, and other credit enhancements. The proposal was strongly supported on a bipartisan basis in our committee as part of the larger energy bill we reported. It also had a broad range of external support from clean energy developers, from innovators, from venture capital firms. Fixing the problems of the current Department of Energy loan guarantee program and ensuring that we have an effective financing authority for a broad range of clean energy technologies, including renewables and nuclear and energy efficiency and carbon capture and storage, needs to be one of our highest priorities. I'm committed to trying to move ahead with that legislation again in this Congress. The second of these issues related to financing is a priority area of replenishing the fund to award tax credits under Section 48C. This section, of course, provided up to a 30% tax credit for the costs of creating, expanding, or re-equipping facilities to manufacture clean energy technologies. The initial funding was vastly oversubscribed. I think the government received about $10 billion in applications for $2.3 billion in tax credits that were available. I think that's a powerful demonstration of the potential for clean energy manufacturing that exists in the country. In the last Congress, Senators Hatch and Stabenow and Lugar joined me in filing the America Clean Technology Manufacturing Leadership Act. This would have added an additional $2.5 billion in tax credit allocation authority. The President has called for $5 billion additional. I would hope that we can introduce legislation very quickly to comply with the President's request in that regard, and I hope we can get the support we need. This, of course, is something that would be in the Finance Committee, not in the Energy Committee, but it's an area that it's essential we move ahead on. The third area related to financing that I just wanted to briefly mention is the need to bring some stability and predictability to the parts of the tax code that affect these projects in order for us to attract the private capital to clean energy projects, which we want to attract. When you look at just at the energy-related tax incentive scheduled to expire at the end of this year, you see Section 1603 scheduled to expire again, credit for energy efficiency, residential retrofits scheduled to expire, credit for construction of new energy efficient homes scheduled to expire, incentives for alcohol fuels, mostly ethanol and biodiesel, renewable diesel. All of these are tax provisions that are scheduled to expire. As all of you have observed, I'm sure we have this this pattern of behavior in the Congress where the extension of these tax provisions is always sort of a perils of Pauline kind of a exercise at the end of every session of Congress to see if we can actually get it done before Congress adjourns. And we need to get away from that and provide some reasonable predictability to what is happening here. One other major challenge and priority for the Energy Committee in this Congress will be to address the proper and effective regulation of energy development in order to protect public health and safety, as well as the environment. I met this morning with Michael Bromwich, the director of the Bureau of Ocean Energy Management, Regulation, and Enforcement. I think that's BEMER. I met with Michael, and clearly he is working very hard to try to get his arms around the management problem, which became so evident when we had the spill in the Gulf this last summer. One of the important lessons that we learned from the National Commission on the Deepwater Horizon oil spill is that in the long run, no one, at least of all the regulated industry, benefits from inadequate regulation and underfunded regulators. In the aftermath of that disaster, our Committee on Energy and Natural Resources last June came together, unanimously voted out a bipartisan bill to address the key problems uncovered by our hearings about the disaster. Unfortunately, Congress did not take up and enact that bill before the Congress adjourned. Our first hearing in this Congress last week was devoted to hearing from the co-chairman of the President's Commission on their recommendations. I hope to introduce, again on a bipartisan basis, a follow-on bill to last year's legislation in the near future, and I hope we can repeat our bipartisan success of the last Congress in developing a bill that recognizes our need to develop the rich resources of the Outer Continental Shelf, but also minimize the potential impacts of developing those resources on the marine and coastal environment and on human health and safety. This is important work that needs to be completed. Finally, an item I hope we can address early in the Congress in our Energy Committee deals with perhaps the most pressing energy security problem that we have, and that's the vulnerability of the electrical grid to cyber attack. A major disruption of the electric transmission grid or the equipment it contains as part of a cyber attack could have disastrous consequences. We need to ensure that adequate preventative measures are in place across the grid. The problem is we don't currently have mechanisms to ensure that these needed steps are being taken. The whole grid is as vulnerable as its weakest link. In the last Congress, our committee twice passed legislation to address this need. The House of Representatives also sent a bill to the Senate on this subject, but due to our inability to process legislation in any mode other than through unanimous consent, we were not able to pass that legislation into law. We need to have this be a top priority for the committee as we begin our work this year. So in conclusion, I've laid out a pretty aggressive opening agenda for the committee. This week we have two hearings, one to advance a bipartisan bill to ensure our nation's future supply of medical isotopes. The other is to raise the curtain on energy activities and issues generally in this Congress. Next week, Senate Democrats are away from Washington in a retreat for several days, so our committee will not meet. But following the release of the President's budget on February 14, we expect to hear from Secretary Chu on February 16, from Secretary Salazar and the Chief of the Forest Service on their budget requests in the first week after the President's Day recess. And when we finished with our duties to scrutinize the Administration's budget request, we will return to legislative hearings, and by that time I hope that we have sufficient bipartisan engagement with both the returning members to the committee and the new members to the committee that we can make good progress on developing one or more energy bills for the full Senate to consider in the first several months of this year. So let me stop with that. I'm sure there will be a few questions, and again thank Simon and NDN for giving me the opportunity to speak about our agenda for this early part of the Congress.
Well, ladies and gentlemen, the Senator has graciously agreed to take some questions, so we'd like to open it up now to, see, we have a question right here, David Roberts.
Hi, Senator, thanks for coming. I know that Michael, among others, we won't need to ask you about the regulatory structure of the utility industry. As I'm sure you're aware, we're half deregulated, half still regulated, it's a mess, it's a tangle, a lot of people think that no matter how much you sort of push a regulated monopoly utility to do efficiency or more clean energy, it's going to be resistant as long as that structure is in place. So I wonder, is there any talk about taking another run at trying to rationalize or reform the utility industry in some way?
Well, to tell you the truth, I don't know of a proposal to rationalize or reform the utility industry that has bipartisan support in the Congress these days. I'm not aware of one. There may be one, but that's a pretty major undertaking you just described. And I just don't think that it's likely we're going to get our arms around that as part of what this Congress does. That's my view.
Okay, for the next question, I'd like to ask if you could stand to the mic so that we make sure that everybody can hear. Yes, sir.
Chairman, Chris Holland with the Energy Daily. I wonder if you expect the committee to take up legislation dealing with cost allocation and siting of new transmission, or is that issue safely now in the hands of the commission?
Well, we had language, as you know, in the legislation we reported out of our committee in 2009 that address this and did give FERC additional siting authority and set out some very broad parameters as to how to allocate costs. I would hope we could move ahead with that legislation again. I haven't had enough discussions with members of the committee to know if we have the support to do that, but I would hope we would.
Yes, sir. And I'd like to ask one other additional thing. If you could identify yourself before asking the question, please. Thank you.
John Grant, Fox News. Senator, to what extent will unrest in Egypt and the broader Middle East push our energy strategy in the forward? Do you think that will provide an impetus to work on getting away from foreign oil in the future?
Frankly, it's impossible to know. I think, as I tried to say in my initial comments, anytime there's a disruption or a potential disruption in international supplies of oil, you see a lot of activity around Washington, and people give speeches and propose various things need to be done immediately. Most of the solutions to our dependence on foreign sources of oil cannot be done immediately. So I don't know. I'm sure there'll be calls for us to ramp up production or whatever, depending upon how the situation in Egypt resolves itself. But I think the truth is most of the action that could be taken will have to occur over a substantial period of time.
Sir, yes. And by the way, if anyone would like to go ahead and stand next to the microphone, that might speed things.
Senator, I'm Keith Curtis, U.S. Department of Commerce. We're working on energy issues. And you mentioned a lot of the competition from overseas. I'm wondering what you think is what we might need to do to address the promotion of U.S. clean energy exports overseas to markets where there is demand.
Well, frankly, I think we have a lot more clean energy products and technologies coming into our market than we are able to export right now. the demand for these products and technologies is overseas. I don't know. I think anyone who's manufacturing, for example, photovoltaic cells here in the United States, has a good market for whatever they can produce. Some of it is overseas. We have a manufacturer in Albuquerque, New Mexico, that is producing for the domestic market, but also ships a lot to Germany because of the demand pull that Germany has put in place through their feed-in tariff system. So I don't know what more we need to be doing to really promote export as much as we need to be promoting the establishment of the manufacturing capacity here so we can meet our own needs as well as some of the foreign demand.
Yes, other questions in the back?
Kenny Fletcher with Exchange Monitor Publications. Do you support nuclear becoming part of a clean energy standard? And are you seeing a lot of support on the Republican side?
Well, as far as whether I'm seeing support on the Republican side, frankly, I haven't had enough discussions with other members of the Senate, Republican or Democratic, to know where the support's going to wind up being. My own view is that if we can develop a workable clean energy standard that actually continues to provide an incentive for renewable energy projects to move forward and can provide additional incentive for some of the other clean energy technologies, nuclear being one, I would like to see that happen. So I'm approaching the issue with a willingness to work on trying to come up with a way to achieve what the president set out.
Okay, I think we have time for two more questions, sir.
John Marsh, Fidelity Pulse. Senator, in the State of the Union, the president suggested financing the clean energy initiative by cutting out subsidies to big oil. How likely is that?
Well, I think, frankly, that proposal was also in the president's first and second budgets submittals to the Congress, the very same proposal. It didn't get any traction, I think it's fair to say, during the last 2 years. So I would be surprised if it got a great deal of traction in the 112th Congress either.
Okay, one final question.
Jessica DeServo, intern from the EPA. Is a renewable energy standard contingent upon connecting renewable energy to the national grid? And if so, is this an issue that the government or utility companies should deal with?
Well, it is contingent in the sense that the way we designed the renewable electricity standard, you only get credit for the electricity you sell, so you got to connect to the grid, So I think to that extent, it is essential. I think the government is working. NIST is in charge of trying to oversee the development of a lot of specific standards, many of which will relate to how the grid becomes a national grid and a smart grid. And so the government is involved to that extent. I think private utilities, of course, have the ultimate responsibility to go ahead use those standards and get themselves hooked up.
Thank you very much. Thank you.